Good morning and welcome to this day fully dedicated to Microsoft Cloud Solutions. Of course, we are extremely happy that you're here, you made the time, you did the investment. We know that picking a day out of your busy schedule and investing it in being here, understanding and learning about how Microsoft looks at cloud solutions is a big investment. Even more when the event starts on a Monday morning and you have to probably personally invest in getting up earlier than expecting and beating the traffic jams. My name is Luc van der Velde. As you hinted to the introduction, and I'm running the Developer and Platform Group at Microsoft in Belgium, and later on the session, I will be joined by Bart van de Ginster, who's one of our enterprise architects of the same team, and who will take you by the hand and lead you further into that journey into the cloud. When we were and started preparing for this session, we were thinking about other periods of excitement and innovation, periods where people were strongly looking at the future. And we traveled to history a bit, and we were discussing, and one of the periods that struck us were people were really into innovation and looking at really very strongly looking at the future was at late 1950s. Late 1950s, when Europe was still recovering from World War II, it was only 10 years after. And I remember, and when I talked to my mother, she was in her early 20s then. She still talks with excitement that she went a number of times over that summer to Brussels with her mother and was so excited about the innovation, the new buildings, all those different people that were there from different countries. And late 50s, that was really special, that was not so well known. The reason the people seemed so excited and were so excited was that looking at the future and discovering all those new things, that a lot of them were based on new technologies in building, but also in the environment and especially in their world and how they lived. It was the run-up towards the 60s, the 1960s, which afterwards were very often being called the Golden 60s. And why was that? Because the revolution the people went through was a revolution which was one based upon the standard of living. If you looked at how people were living before World War II and then went through the war and then afterwards, you see that there was a big difference in how people lived, what the level of living was, what the standards were, and how certain new things really started popping up. People started going through these waves of innovation and technological innovation, and it looked like small changes in the beginning, but if you really look today and you look back those 50 years that went past, those was really the start of the evolution, the technological evolutions we are in today. The same way that those people in the late 1950s and in the 60s experienced the electrical revolution, how household appliances came into houses and took over the washing machine, even the toaster, the mixer, all those things that didn't exist before. At the same way, we see a very big shift happening today and then in our world. What we see is not only new devices, very sexy gadgets, natural user interfaces, all types of new computers which we even didn't have 5 years ago. But we see that even more important, that there is a big change in how people work and how people connect to each other, and even more, how it even influences their social life and how they communicate and connect to each other. All of that, all of what we see happening around us in that new big shift is being powered by technology, same as it was in the late 1950s. And powered by technology in such a way that most of it is powered by IT behind it. And that's why we saw that there's such a good connection to the revolution we're seeing today. We see that IT, as we knew it a number of years ago, is changing. and is going two different directions. One direction is it's being consumerized, which means that a lot of what we know and do, which used to be just in the IT glasshouse or outside of the glasshouse in the IT departments, is becoming more and more common knowledge of how things connect and work and are being consumerized. But at the same time, we see that the globalization we see in economy, that same globalization we also see happening in IT. And distances like become very vague to the communication, the connections we have. All of that and all of those global changes we see today are being powered by internet and are being made possible by those connections made by internet. That big shift we see today, those big shifts we see today are happening in two big areas. One area which we call cloud-centric computing, and a second one we call cloud-centric experiences. The one is the computing, the other one is the experiences that people have. Where in today's IT, we see that we still spend an awful lot of time on an investment on simple things as putting projects in production, where we need to be very cautious about how we plan that, what money we invest, how we do the scheduling of when we need new hardware, new machines, how we build in those new apps in the environment. We hope and we see that with the possibilities we have today, that in the future, IT will become much more flexible and will be offering an always-on environment that has higher capabilities, is more flexible, and will be helping you as IT people to be more productive. At the same time, next to IT, we see that consumer behavior and consumer applications are becoming more and more cloud-centric, are already cloud-centric, and are becoming cloud-powered. When we look at how those data centers behind that work, and that's the Microsoft data centers, the eBays, the Facebooks. You probably heard and read about, or some of you did, how those work, how the architectures are different than what you experience today in your own data center. One of the things we're looking at as Microsoft is bringing those technologies, those capabilities you find back in those large global data centers in such a way to your own on-site and on-premise environment that they seamlessly integrate and that you can also benefit of those evolutions in IT. And when we talk future, you'll hear this morning and this afternoon that that future is not that far away, that those technologies are there or almost there, and that large chunks of that can be implemented today. We are moving from the older generations, and when I was talking about the 50s, in the 50s it was the first push where you saw here and there some computer implementations, and most of that very often was in military and in some very, very large organizations. But it was only later in the 60s and in the 70s when the mainframe computers took over. And when I talked to a number of you working large enterprises, the mainframe most of the time is still there and is being complemented by other IT environments. We see that IT has been growing over a number of generations and shifts through PC apps and client server, through connecting to the internet, and now really enabling, being enabled by cloud and by embracing cloud, extending those existing platforms and making them hybrid with cloud environments and cloud applications. So that fifth generation is one that, again, like we saw in the prior slide, is one that will offer you such a big shift. And what we've seen in IT is that very often it is evolutionary, and we hardly see any revolutions where everything we were doing was just stopped. And also here we'll see that we'll be growing to a hybrid phase and to hybrid environments, marrying the two. For Microsoft, and on the Microsoft side, we are saying we're all in. You'll see that in our marketing material. You'll see that in the brochures you were getting today. And for us, we're all in. What does that mean? Well, we are very, very serious about cloud and cloud solutions. We are investing big time in public cloud. We've been doing that over the last 15 years. People that are using Hotmail and some of our other live and environments know that we've been very serious on the consumer side for a long time. And we now bring that same power of cloud-centric computing to the data centers and to you as professional IT environments. So at the same time, as I'm saying, we're helping and we're powering our customers to benefit of the same technologies we find in the cloud. So that's why we're saying we're all in.
So yes, let's talk about the cloud. Basically, we're going to talk about three things and then the next steps. So we're going to talk a little bit about the what is the cloud all about, the why are we doing it, and then, of course, the how. I think the who is all of you. So let's start. Cloud computing, I think we've all been hearing a lot about it, right? I mean, we've seen for the last 2 years a lot of articles, a lot of, press releases and things like that. But what's really cloud about? Now, analysts, when they're talking about the cloud, they're talking about three different things. First of all, they talk about elasticity. Elasticity basically means that your environment is dynamically growing or shrinking, depending on your needs. So it means basically if you have an application running, and you only need 4 servers, it's going to provision 4 servers, right? If you need the day after only 1 server, so it's going to shrink down again. So elasticity, that's one of the things that all analysts, including Gartner and Forrester, are agreeing upon. Second capability is the pay-per-use. Big shift. Basically, we're moving into a model where you're only going to pay what you use. Basically, it means that if you use a server for 1 hour, you're going to pay for 1 hour. Again, a big shift. And then the third one is automated management. How can we reduce the management of our server infrastructure to an absolute zero? Those are the three things that we have when we talk about cloud computing. This has nothing to do with Microsoft. This has nothing to do with any other vendor. This is what analysts think. These three things should be available within your platform if you want to talk about cloud computing. So let's explain a little bit, just to make sure we all have the same understanding what cloud means. Okay. What you can see here is a typical load of an application. I think we're all familiar with this, right? The blue one line is basically your load. So it usually starts low, then you have a peak. Now, there are two ways how you can deal with the peak. You can say, okay, I'm going to add additional hardware, which is good. Then you can serve your customers, serve your business. The problem is, however, after the peak, you have some hardware sitting there collecting dust. So it's not a real good investment. The alternative is, of course, not doing anything. Then you might lose customers. Because when the peak happens, and you're not ready with your hardware, then you're very vulnerable to the competition. So that's an issue. So how do we deal with that? So what we typically see at customers is they're going to scale for maximum load, which is good. But your load is only used once a year, then you have a big issue when it comes to cost. So that's what cloud computing is solving. Basically, when you look in cloud computing, what you see is this. Your whole environment is growing with your needs. So is the price. So in the beginning, you might have one application. Well, you're going to pay for one application, or one server, sorry. Maybe 3 weeks later, you're going to have double amount of users. Well, you're only going to pay for that. Again, the provisioning is happening automatically. And we're talking not about days. We're not talking about weeks. We're talking about minutes, actually. In 1, 2, 3 minutes, another server is placed there for you. And your application can automatically scale. So this is one of the benefits when you talk about cloud. Now, what are typical patterns when you talk about cloud? Let's make me very clear. Not all patterns, application patterns, are applicable to the cloud. You can always move everything within the cloud. That's not a problem. But some patterns are more optimal, if you want. So the first pattern, I think, is an easy one, on-off. You have some operation running, a batch operation, on the Friday afternoon, 4 hours. Well, it's going to run 4 hours. It also means you're going to pay for 4 hours. For the rest of the week, you're not going to pay for anything because it's not consuming anything. So you pay for 4 hours. Already, cost-saving-wise, tremendously important. Second one is growing fast. Typically, and that's a problem that startups have. You know you're going to have, or you hope at least, that your application will be successful. but you have no real good feeling of knowing, I'm going to use 10,000 users, and when? Is it going to happen next week? Or is it going to happen in 2 weeks or in 3 weeks? How do you deal with that? I mean, again, you can go for maximum load, but you hope that your application will be tremendously successful, so you never know what's going to happen. Secondly, even when you become successful, you still have the hardware provisioning. There's always a time needed. Sure, you can call your hoster or you can call your hardware delivery guy and say, look, we need more servers. He won't be there the next day. It may take a couple of weeks. The cloud is solving that because the cloud, again, today you need 10,000 users, it will grow. So it will be the cost. But I think you're more than willing to pay the cost if you know that your application is so successful. Other pattern is unpredictable bursting. Sometimes you get a huge hit on your application server. Again, how do you deal with that? And this is not only external, it's also internal. If, as an IT department, you never know what's going to happen. Sometimes some people change something small, and the impact can be huge. If the business is looking at your department, you want to be there. You do not want to have a server crash. You do not want to say to the business, I'm sorry, we don't have the hardware to fulfill your needs. No. So unpredictable bursting. And it might happen a lot more than you expect. We did a case in Brussels, 20 kilometers of Brussels. I don't know who's a runner. Let me tell you, it was horrible as a smoker, but it's okay. We solved it with this. What happened there is Brussels City. Normally we have 30,000 people running, and they all run, and they're having fun, well, most of them. And at the end, you have a huge clock saying, look, you have run 2 hours. So that was a tradition. But Brussels City, actually the fire department, this year said, look, from a security perspective, you can't do that. You have to run in batches of 10,000 people. So 10,000 people start, 15 minutes later, another 10,000 people left. The problem is your clock is not working anymore. So what happened is all the people arrived, they went home straight away and they went to the website to check the results. At that time, we had a huge peak of 18 server instances running at the same time. So and that just shows, as a small example, that changing something which has nothing to do with IT, it's the fire department. But the impact on the IT was huge. Cloud computing, in this case Windows Azure, has solved the problem. The last one, predictable bursting, I think that's a known one. For instance, tax on web. You know there's going to be seasonality. When do you fill in your taxes? The week before the deadline. Okay, this is how it solves. There are other seasonalities. For instance, end of quarter. Christmas is another one. You know it's going to happen. It's going to be recurring. Again, this is where cloud computing becomes very interesting. At those peak moments, the cloud will provide you all the hardware and all the virtual machines that you need. It will give you the computation power, the storage, everything. In the low times, you don't have to worry. So goes your price. It's a lot more efficient. Now, what are the typical different types? And you will see the slide a couple of times today. First of all, the private clouds. I don't like the word private cloud anymore, and I hope at the end of the session I will convince you why I'm not like to use that word anymore. I like to call it more traditional data center. It's basically you own the whole stack. You basically control from the network layer till the application layer. Next to that, we have what we call infrastructure as a service. Basically, it means that the vendor or the IT department provides a platform, and you as a customer can put virtual machines on top of that. The platform will take the virtual machines, make sure everything is kept up and running, and scales automatically for you. Okay. Next one is the platform as a service. You don't control the virtual machines anymore in that. The vendor will provide you already some OS in the cloud with the number of runtimes installed. But you also do all the patch management, everything related to that within those machines. You, as a customer, has a choice to put an application in there and to benefit from a number of services. Again, it's a matter of cost. Where do you put the cost? Do you put the cost in your own IT department or do you put it at a vendor's place? So platform as a service. Then the last one, software as a service. You don't choose the application. It's basically the application is already deployed for you. It's already maintained for you. And you can configure it. So those are the four types, and we will talk about a lot about this today because Microsoft is capable of doing all four of them. Not only all four of them as a principal, as an ID, but also all four of them independent of the location. It means all those four are possible in on-premise, either at a hoster or actually in our own data centers. Anyways, when you're talking about cloud, and as a customer, it's important to think about cloud. I mean, it's there. It's happening. Yeah. As I always tend to say, the cloud is landing into the field. It's very important that you make a number of reflections when you think about the cloud. Because how do you want to choose and where do you want to choose to deploy your things? First of all, we think from a cloud perspective, a cloud platform. There are a couple of things that need to be there. I already mentioned a couple of them. Elasticity, automated service management, of course. High availability comes as a given. Okay, and of course, multi-tenancy. The reason why we do multi-tenancy is to increase utilization of your platform. Usually what we see at customers is one application, one server. Multi-tenancy should give you the opportunity to say multiple applications on multiples on a single instance. Again, increase the utilization of your platform to decrease the cost. On top of that, as a customer, you should have the choice to think about a couple of things. As a customer, you should have the choice to choose whether would I like to have deploy my cloud capabilities on-premise or would I like to have it at Microsoft or a hoster. Same goes for the type of OS you want to run. Do you want to have a heterogeneous environment or a homogeneous environment? Again, those are a number of things that as a customer you should have the choice. It's not the vendor who should say to you, look, if you have a platform and you want to run the platform with us, well, I'm sorry, then certain things won't be possible. No. As a customer, you have a couple of constraints. Usually it's a business functionalities, maybe some legal constraints. So as a vendor, we should give you the opportunity to say, look, I want to have those capabilities, and I want to run them on-premise, maybe in a hybrid model, on-premise combined with some stuff running within our data centers or within a hoster. So at any time, these things should be possible. I hope for the rest of the day, or the rest of the session at least, I will convince you of that. That's exactly what Microsoft is offering you. In the end, we want to give you all the functionalities we have within our applications. And it's your choice to choose which part of the application you're going to deploy, either on-premise, at a hoster, or within the Microsoft Cloud. Okay, what's the opportunity? Actually, the opportunity is huge. When you're talking about cloud computing, I already mentioned a couple of things, but a lot more than that. The iceberg. I don't know actually how to pronounce it properly, but anyways, we all know this, right? See the tip of the iceberg, 1/10, and everything is underneath. I mean, at least the Titanic remembers very well. So, and IT is the same. We have our software and hardware, but that's just a fraction of the cost involved. There's a whole lot underneath there to make sure you can do the two top things. For instance, disaster recovery, backup, service management. All those things are still part of the problem. Wouldn't it be nice that you could focus on just building software, making sure everything is there, providing value to your customers? Because in the end, your customer, he cares about the backup, but he sees it as part of your service you're delivering. So if you can save on those 90% below, that would be tremendous, would be good. And that's basically what cloud computing is doing. If you look in the IT space, there are three profilations going on, three expectations. If you look from an application model, the expectation now is that you should be able to deploy your applications very fast, very quickly. Put it in the cloud. Okay? You should be, the faster you go in there, the more competitive you are. So that's one thing. Hardware model. The hardware should be efficient. I mean, hardware should be as cheap as possible. It should be there. It should be working. If some parts are not working, you don't want to start messing around with how what's not working. You should be able to just shift it, replace it with something else. That's where the cost efficiency comes from. Operational model, I already mentioned. That's very important as well because a lot of time we spend on upgrading our servers. We spend a lot of time on patching, on re-imaging, on all those things. We should try to minimize that. And that's what basically cloud is doing. If you look at it from a cloud perspective, basically, if you fix it on the application model, the cloud gives you the chance to go 10 times faster to market. From a hardware efficiency perspective, it's 10 times more efficient. Just to give an example, within Microsoft Cloud centers, data centers, for instance, we have now, I think it's about 3,000 servers managed by one single person, which is amazing. Okay. And you might say, okay, 10 times, it's a lot. Maybe it's marketing. But even when it's 5 times, it's already big. And that's really the promise of cloud computing. Okay. Cloud computing gives you the opportunity to be professional as an IT service department. It allows you to be very efficient, cost, cost, well, from a cost perspective, and it allows you to be very professional towards your external customers, but also to your internal customers, being the business. So that's basically the great opportunity that we have ahead of us if you start using cloud computing. The means, it's very simple. Microsoft is tremendously investing in data centers worldwide. We have about 100 data centers. We have a couple in the United States. We have some in South America. We have a whole bunch in Europe, in Dublin, for instance, and also in Australia. Microsoft is investing on a yearly basis $9.6 billion. 60 to 70% of that investment is going into cloud computing. It means that we have data centers now which are extremely efficient. But we're going a step beyond that. Not only are we investing for our own needs, but we're also making all those advancements and all those tools and technologies that we have learned, we're also putting it on the market. And that's what you're going to see in the next, well, actually it's already today available, and you're going to see it in a couple of sessions, what we can do. This is a result of the last 10 years of investment we made in that. An example is this. This is how a data center block, building block, looks like. 50,000 servers in there. It's about $300 per server as a price, which is basically peanuts. We have specialized CPUs. We have removed all the hardware. It's only focusing on one thing, providing computation power, storage power, and network. It has two cables, electricity, connectivity, air-cooled. That's basically what we're talking about. You can buy this. So we also have a smaller brother. It's called the appliance. It only has 300 to 800 servers. So, and that's coming to the market as well. Again, this is a result of the 10 years investment that Microsoft had made into cloud computing. And originally, it wasn't because we were planning on selling it to our customers, but mainly because we already had our cloud. Like I said, the Hotmail, Luke has mentioned that. We had Hotmail running, which is basically software as a service within our cloud. So we invested a lot to make sure that those things are running, and that's now coming to the market. Of course, it's more than hardware. Okay. If you look at the cloud, there are three principles, three types we support from Microsoft's perspective. First of all, we fully support the infrastructure as a service, meaning that we can provide you the means and the tools allowing you to host virtual machines, dynamically provisioned, scaling and shrinking, depending on your needs. Next to that, we also have what we call platform as a service. We have it on-premise and we have it in the cloud, or actually online, sorry. So we also have those tools available today. Okay. And then thirdly, we also have software as a service. And again, we have those available on-premise at a hoster or within our own data centers. Now, looking at these, let's give you examples how it looks like from a Microsoft perspective. First of all, on-premise, I think we all know those. We have our Office Communication Service, SharePoint, Exchange, Dynamics, software as a service. Right, these are available. You can install these right now on-premise. In the platform as a service, a couple of examples. We have SQL Server. We have our .NET servers. These are available right now. And then, of course, Windows Server and System Center. But there's one new addition. It's not fully a product yet. It's a toolkit. It's called Dynamic Infrastructure Toolkit for System Center. It means you can download these toolkits. They are free, containing all kinds of processes, guidance, scripts, all that stuff, allowing you now to have your own private cloud on-premise. So you don't have to wait. You can do it right now. You can do it today. Okay. Now, if you look at the public side, we split it up in two sides. First of all, we have on the hosters. All the products you have currently available on-premise can be hosted. And this is a big shift for Microsoft as well. Let me give you an example. Exchange 2007, for instance. You could put it in hosted mode, but it required, well, extra consultancy, let's put it like that, put it in hosted mode. What you see now is, with the Exchange 2010, all those hosting capabilities are part of the product. And you're going to see that for all products. It means that for Microsoft, again, it does not make a difference where you're going to deploy it. The Exchange you're going to deploy on-premise is going to be the same Exchange that Microsoft has running online. It's the same Exchange that you're running as a service provider. Again, we do not think there should be a difference. Functionality-wise, it's going to be the same. And it's the customer, it's you, who has to make a choice, where do I want to deploy things? Then on the Microsoft side, we have, of course, the same products. We have SharePoint Online, we have Exchange Online. We also have our Windows Azure, and a SQL Azure. We'll talk about a little bit more in the next slide. And of course, we have a Windows Azure as an infrastructure as a service. So it means that virtual machines, for instance, you can host it on-premise, but with the two toolkits available, one for the on-premise and one for the hosters, you can actually have virtual machines running on-premise, and depending on your load, it can actually automatically grow or to be deployed at a hoster or deployed within the Microsoft premises. In the end, a cloud is a set of capabilities. It doesn't matter where the cloud starts. It can start within Microsoft, it can start on-premise, and it can grow automatically depending on your needs. So basically, that's what Microsoft is doing. Microsoft does not believe that, well, that everyone is going to move everything in the cloud immediately like that. You're always going to have hybrid models. So Microsoft also believes that you as a customer should be able to pick up what you want. For instance, it should be possible to have a SQL Server on-premise, computation power in the cloud. Those choices, the hybrid model, should be possible at all times. How are we going to enable that? Well, there are a couple of things. Connectivity is a big player in that. So there are four ways we're going to provide you connectivity. Well, actually, we're already providing that. You can download those tools today. First of all, we're going to provide you connectivity on the database level. It means all the replication scenarios you know today are still working. It means you can have a SQL Server in the cloud at Microsoft, or you can have one in the cloud on-premise. They're going to synchronize perfectly. Service bus, we have a full enterprise-ready service bus sitting there, allowing you to exchange messages between applications. Typical example might be you have an SAP running on-premise, some computation power at Microsoft, can communicate to each other. Third one, access control service on security level. All Microsoft products are federated, enabled. So it means that you can have your Active Directory locally, on-premise, exposed as a federated service, allowing you to authenticate and do authorization with cloud-based applications. We do not think you should start replicating again all that data. No. You should go over federated scenarios, which is based on the OASIS standard. Again, this is the vision of Microsoft, hybrid models. We're going to make sure that everything is possible, and it's there for you, and it's your choice to choose within Microsoft, at a host, or on-premise. And then the last one, connectivity, is the Project Sydney. It's currently in technology preview. Basically, it allows you to have your own VPN tunneling straight into Microsoft's data center. Typical example where you're going to use it, you have some computation power running in the cloud at Microsoft. You have a printer locally. How do you solve that issue? So basically, what Project Sydney allows you to do is when someone hits the print button, the printing will happen locally, although all the computation power might happen in the cloud. Another example is the SAN. You have some file storage. You want to have access to a drive letter, but the drive letter happens to be hosted within Microsoft. This technology allows you the transparency into achieving that. Okay, so let me go quickly about a couple of things, because during lunch, we are organizing chalk and talk sessions. That's the time where you can actually see more details about these things. First of all, Business Productivity Online Suite, which is a great example of software as a service. It's basically your Exchange Online, your Communicator Online, it's now called Flink, SharePoint Online, all combined, but hosted within Microsoft data centers. Again, it's perfectly possible with the new version that you have some Active Directory locally on-premise and still have using some, let's say, 500 users within Microsoft data centers and all the rest in your on-premise. It can combine those things together. So definitely, that's definitely a great example of hybrid model. So if you're interested in that, go to the chalk and talk session over the lunch. Second one, CRM Dynamics Online. It's not available right now. It's coming very new, soon. I think this year. This is a calendar year. Same thing. I mean, why would you choose and to limit yourself in a number of functionalities if by choosing for online? You don't have to. Whatever you're going to be able to do on-premise, you can do it online as well. So again, this is a great example of a software as a service which works in a complete hybrid model. We're also going to have a chalk and talk session about that over the lunch. Windows Intune. I mean, some companies don't have a system center, don't want to be bothered about management of software upgrades and things like that. We have a software as a service solution called Windows Intune, which does just allows you to do that. It allows you from within Microsoft Data Center to manage PCs outside our data centers. Again, this is a great example of a hybrid model. You might have 10,000 PCs within on-premise, which are managed by System Center or any other tool. But you might have those 300 other PCs sitting out there, branch offices, brokers, which you don't really control. Windows Intune is giving you an answer to that. Again, we have a chalk and talk session about that. Then, of course, my beloved Windows Azure. Depending how you are on the ocean, it's either Azure or Azure. Basically, it's platform as a service. It provides you computation power, right? Storage power. Also SQL Azure. You have a complete SQL server into the cloud. And this is a real SQL Server 2008 R2. I mean, from a tooling perspective, it does not make any difference. Okay, so it means if you have something running a solution on-premise, you can just take whatever you have, put it in SQL Azure. Also the other way around. And we also have the App Fabric, which allows you to have the service bus and also have a federated scenarios. On top of that, and this is new, Microsoft supports .NET, PHP, Ruby, Iron Pine, all those things. If you want to be credible as a vendor, as a cloud vendor, let's put it like that, you have to do more than just one technology. So from Microsoft's perspective, it means you can host whatever technology you want. Furthermore, if there's a technology we don't support, we allow you to take up your machine as a virtual machine and host it within Microsoft premises. So this is also part of the Windows Azure. And then the last one, Dynamic Center Toolkits. These are two toolkits which are available today. Basically, we have one for hosters. We have one for on-premise. It's a toolkit with prescriptive guidance. It explains you how to set up your own private cloud infrastructure. It explains how to use the right processes and how to combine all those things. You can download them, and you can start using them today. They also fit in our story into the future, as already mentioned. Cloud is not something that happens only at Microsoft. Cloud is something that can start on-premise. Cloud is something that can start within your data center today. Okay. For us, the future is very simple. You're going to have a number of virtual machines or other tools running on-premise. And depending on the load, it will scale automatically. Either will go to a hoster or go to Microsoft. Those toolkits are fitting in that story. A great example of that is, for instance, disaster recovery. What you typically see now, you have two geographically distributed centers for disaster recovery. Well, basically, why not using Microsoft centers as a failover? Why investing in those two centers? Why not having your own data center doing what it should be doing? And in case of a disaster, why not doing a failover to one of the, well, it could be at a hoster, or it could be at Microsoft. So this is what the toolkits are enabling. Today you will see a lot about those toolkits. I think a couple of sessions this afternoon are talking specifically about that, what the possibilities are, and what the opportunities are. Again, I keep on repeating myself, but this is for Microsoft. And this is the reason also why I don't like talking about private cloud anymore. In the end, private, public, it's a matter of, okay, that's how the market started. But for Microsoft, it's very simple. For Microsoft, you have a cloud, and as a customer, you're going to use that cloud. And in the end, where those servers are deployed, it's important. But it's a choice that you make as a customer, where those servers are running. You could choose, well, cost could be one factor. Lack of knowledge within your own company could be another factor. But sometimes you will say, look, from a regulation perspective, I need to have my things running. For instance, I need to have my database running on-premise, and I'm going to spend all my computation power in the cloud. At all times, Microsoft believes this is the future, and this is how it's going to work, the hybrid model. In between, we're going to make sure that those connectivities are working seamlessly with each other. Plus, we're going to have on a security level, it's going to be completely federated. Okay. Now, talking about cloud without talking about the competition wouldn't be fair, right? This is a Microsoft event. Nevertheless, it means we still have to talk about the competition. And the competition is not sitting still. They are there. Again, we have the three layers. We have our infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service. And then we have global providers, being Microsoft or Google or Amazon. Service providers and the customer. Google and Salesforce are primarily in software as a service and in platform as a service a little bit. And they are public. In that sense, they are a global provider. Okay. Google does not provide you the tools to run anything on-premise. nor does it provide you a version of software to be able to be run at a hoster. It does not. So from a legal perspective, you have to see whether it's possible to use this or not. Amazon, the bookstore, I'm sorry, but that's what it is. It is a great story. And that's they are responsible for making cloud happening, actually. They were the first ones making it more commoditized. They are primarily known as a global provider, doing a good job, but they are providing infrastructure as a service. That's basically what they're doing. They have a little bit of platform as a service. It's very limited. Then we have VMware, not a global provider. It's more a middleware provider, if you want. So they are available to service providers and to customers. And their technology is primarily focused about virtual machines. So it's primarily fitting into the infrastructure as a service. Microsoft itself is basically doing it all. That's the key message that we want to give. So we are all in when we talk about that. It does not mean we are all in from an organization perspective. It also means we are all in on all the three types of cloud. It also means we are all in talking about the location. Okay. And that's very important. For Microsoft, this is a big bet. We are betting our future on this, and we're going to make this happen. Not only going to make this happen, we're going to also lead the story, because we do believe that we are all in. So, what are the next steps? I hope you're still awake. First of all, try Windows Azure for free. It's a shameless plug, but nevertheless. Windows Azure is available. It's today. You can try for free. We have a couple of offers. First of all, free introductory offer. 24 hours for free. No hassles. You can use it. Everyone should have received a paper. It explains in three steps what you can do. Step one is how to download the tools free of charge. Secondly, how to get the offer, basically. And fourth, most importantly, how to build a simple Hello World application into the cloud. It takes about an hour, the whole process, and you can have it within the cloud. The second offer we also have is MSDN subscription, which is basically 760 hours for free. Everyone who has this MSDN subscription, there's a little coupon. Just pick it up, type in the code, and off you go. You can use Windows Azure, experiment with Windows Azure at least for 760 hours. If you want more information, this is the website where you can find this. Second thing, a call to action, if you want. Within Microsoft, we are organizing or running a program. Basically, we're going to assist you. First of all, if you have an application that you think that might be interesting to run on Windows Azure, we're going to assist you. Meaning, step one, we're going to talk with you, and we're going to make a high-level assessment of your application. We have a number of tools who can assist you, and we're going to run over your application and make a high-level assessment. Look, is this application feasible to be put in the cloud? That's one. Secondly, depending on the outcome of step one, we're going to organize a deep workshop with you. It means we're going to have an architectural discussion about what your application is, what the risks are, what the constraints are, and what potentially needs to be changed to move it within the cloud. So we're going to do that. Third aspect of our program is we're going to provide you assistance, deep assistance. When you move your application to the cloud, we're going to be there. So within part of our program, we're going to provide you some technical resources. We're going to help you with doing proof of concepts. We're going to have some other things, some other people just being there for you. Okay? So the goal is to help you to make the transition from on-premise and to Windows Azure as smooth as possible. Finally, if it works out and we have our application running into the cloud, we're going to make it visible. We're not only going to show the story, we're also going to tell the story. Means that we're going to use all in marketing engines to talk about you. So it means we're going to make a reference case out of you, case study about you. And that's part of actually from the Windows Azure Logo program. We're going to assist you. The Windows Azure Logo program is a program run by Microsoft Corporation, which allows you to analyze your application. If it fulfills the criteria, and we're going to help you with that. It means you're going to be put in a portfolio. It means you're going to be spread around the world, and we're going to talk about you, which is going to create you a lot of visibility. If you're interested in that, please send me an email. Okay, I'll be more than happy to start an engagement with you. Okay, we're going to help you in doing that. Or leave me your business card at the entrance. Just leave me your business card that we know, and then we will contact you probably next week already, talking about your application. Third option is, in the evaluation sheet, there is a question whether you have an interesting project ticket, and then we will contact you as well. Okay. I hope I have been able to convince you that Microsoft is more than just public cloud. As I said, Microsoft is there on the infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. But Microsoft is also being on-premise, being at a hoster, or being in the public online within our own data centers, and anything in between. I hope it's clear that for Microsoft, it's a hybrid story. And also it's clear that you as a customer, you choose which parts you're going to put there. In the end, you should benefit of all the capabilities that we are providing with our tools and technologies. So as such, I would like to close down the keynote. I would like to invite you for a very interesting day. And I hope it's going to be an interesting journey to the cloud. Thank you.